Stage Dramas present the third episode of The Poisoned Crystal, a dramatization of the third installment of the thrilling, glamorous mystery serial which appears in next Sunday's American Weekly. This latest mystery novel, The Poisoned Crystal, has all America playing detective. What kind of a detective are you? Listen carefully to this dramatization. It has a surprise finish, one that will tax your imagination and powers of crime detection. You can play a very exciting game and get the complete answers to the problems in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. But now, let's listen once more to Abel Weems, dramatic critic who is telling this exciting story.
Thank you, John Martin. Well, you all know by now how Tess Blandon died at the 33 Club after the opening of Don Rockwood's new play. I was there for a supper given by Martin Gow, the producer, who had invited Rock, Tess Blandon, the leading woman, Arthur Preble, the leading man, and myself. Tess was murdered by drinking poisoned wine. The DA arrested Preble, Martin Gow, and Rockwood on suspicion of murder. I was released on bail as a material witness. Then came the bombshell. Rockwood confessed to the crime, but I was sure his confession was phony and set out to prove it. At a little bar on 45th, I kept an appointment out there. Mrs. Rockwood?
And you are Abel Weems.
Yes. Sit down, won't you? Have a drink?
A drink and an explanation.
A dozen of both, if you want. Eddie, bring the lady...
A scotch and soda. Now, Mr. Weems, let's get down to cases.
You've read the papers. You know Rock is in a jam. I'm his friend, and, well, naturally, I want to get him out of it.
How did you locate me?
I had a good look at you Saturday night in the 33 Club. I noticed you were wearing a wedding ring, that you called Rock Don, and that he was as white as a sheet when you spoke to him. So I put two and two together, and it spelled Mrs. Rockwood. Louis Ravini at the 33 said you were a regular customer. So I tried all the nearby hotels and was lucky enough to find you at the Wharton.
And now what?
Well, now it's up to you.
I don't see where I'm concerned. It's unfortunate that Don happened to be with Miss Blandon when she was killed. But surely they don't actually suspect he did it.
Rock has confessed to it.
But why on earth is he doing such a thing?
Did it ever occur to you that Rock might be still very much in love with you?
No.
He's as stubborn as a mule, I'll admit that. And sometimes he needs a little handling, but he's sincere, very sincere. I don't know what split you two up, and I don't care, but right now he thinks you poisoned Tess Blandon.
Oh, no. No, he couldn't.
Well, he does. He probably knows you've got a nasty temper. I can see that.
Oh.
He knows it's the sort of temper that boils for a long time, but it explodes. And when the crack-up arrives, well, anything is liable to happen. Am I right?
Yes, you're right. It was one of those explosions that split us up and sent Rock away from me. But goodness knows I'm not a murderer. Why on earth would I want to kill Tess Blandon?
I don't know that. But I'll tell you this. He's gone over this whole thing and decided you were the only one who could have done it. And he's taking the rap for you.
Oh, no, he's not. Come on. We'll go over and put a stop to this nonsense immediately.
Now, don't be in such a hurry. Listen and don't interrupt. Now, I've got an idea that may be good, and I want you to help. The 33 Club has been closed since Saturday night. But I want you to be there at 10:30 tonight. Understand?
No, I don't.
Well, that helps. I don't want you to understand. I just want you to go to the 33 Club at 10:30. Ring the bell and leave the rest to me. I'm going to get Rock out of this mess and get you out of it, too. Now, the district attorney will be there, and when he asks you for your name, I want you to say it's Lola Barton.
I don't know what this is all about, but you seem very sure of yourself. So it's a deal.
Okay, Lola Barton. It's a deal.
It's ridiculous, Abel. If the papers ever got wind of an affair like this, they'd take my skin off an inch at a time. Look at it. D.A. Halliday stages mock trial at scene of crime.
It's not a mock murder. It's a sort of a rehearsal. You know as well as I do that many a perfectly written script develops a dozen flaws when it goes into rehearsal. No matter how well the playwright strings his words together, when the actors work through their lines, a flock of mistakes and holes in the action always occur. And if it's true on the stage, why not equally true in life?
Oh, I see your point of the argument, but too many things could happen.
That's exactly what I say. Plenty can happen. Now, we'll get the same crowd in the same room around the table and go through the whole scene again and again and again until we find the flaw. And when we find that flaw, we'll have found the murderer.
You're still sure Rock couldn't have done it?
Positive. Now, if I show you one mistake in Rock's confession, would you agree with me?
Gladly. In fact, if you find a hole in it and don't tell me, I'll toss you in a cell and let you think it over.
Well, I'll save you the trouble, Tom. Rock didn't think we'd catch up with the mysterious lady of the 33 Club.
Did you?
Yes. Just an hour ago.
And?
She's a stage-struck dame by the name of Lola Barton. Wants to be an actress. Yeah. I had a talk with her, and she agreed to show up at the 33 Club tonight.
Oh.
She'll play her part. Now, how about it?
All right, Abel, we'll try it. But I've hit on a peculiar angle, one that puts off the people who catch his leading man in a bad light.
Oh, really?
He spent over a year in a sanitarium for mental cases.
Oh.
Tess had been writing people for 5 years. People's mind may have jumped a few kinks with the result that took place at the 33.
Tell me, Tom, what did Preble have on his person when he was locked up? You know, poison, anything like that?
Nothing more potent than a box of aspirin that had been analyzed.
Do you happen to have another box of aspirin in your desk?
Yes, fine.
Some you bought yourself?
Yes.
Okay. Give it to me and remember that.
All right, I will. But let's get those three up here and get going to the 33 Club.
Well, we're all set. There's the bottle of wine. 4 glasses. Everyone in place just as they were when Tess died.
Yeah.
Let's see. We need something to take the place of the poison. What can we use? The man who potted this thing would have undoubtedly prepared the poison in capsule or tablet form like the aspirin. So we'll use aspirin tablets as a substitute. Anyone got any aspirin by any chance?
You know I have. You saw it among my effects that EA gave me back. Here.
Oh. Thanks, Beeble. You can have them back later. Now, I'll put one tablet in front of Gao, another before Preble, and a third here at the edge of Rock's glass. Now, everybody ready?
Yes.
Right here, Rock. You put this aspirin tablet between the index and the middle finger of your right hand.
But I've already told you it wasn't done that way.
Never mind what you told me. Do as I say. Put the aspirin tablet between the index and middle finger of your right hand. That's it. That's where I'd put the poison if I were a murderer. Now, Preble, Gao, you do the same thing.
Say, you seem to be very adept at this. You know, if I were the district attorney, I might dig around and try to find a motive for you.
Okay, score one for Preble, and let's get on with the rehearsal. Now, let's see. First, Preble wipes Tess's glass. Tom, you're taking Tess's place. During the rehearsal, we'll call you, Tess, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Just let me have a copy of that, thank you.
Okay, now, Louis, pour the wine. Preble, you wipe the glass and say just what you said that night.
Always your servant, Tess. You do that very well, Preble. As a waiter, you're perfect. Speak to Louis about that, Martin. It might be just the spot for Preble, a waiter in the 33 Club.
Stop this confounded wrangling.
You have...
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure of what I said, Abel.
Never mind what you said. Just jump to your feet and shake the table.
All right.
All right, now, Preble, wait a minute. You put your hand over Rock's glass and also over the one in front of Tess.
Why did you ask me to do that?
Because you did it before. The glasses shook, and you steadied those with the wine in them. Tess and Rock's glass.
Yes, maybe I did. I'd forgotten.
All right. No. Over the top. Put your hands on the rims. Cover both glasses with your hands. That's right. Now spread your fingers a little and let the aspirin drop in the wine.
Good work, Abel. A very satisfactory rehearsal. I wondered how Preble had done it. Thanks for the explanation.
Explanation? You may consider it an explanation, but I call it a deliberate frame-up. It's just a sort of a filthy trick I should expect from a critic. But don't think you've outwitted me. Not a bit. Let's go on with this thing. What about her? She drinks from the glass. She drinks, I tell you, and she's not harmed. She's alive.
Why all the excitement? We're not finished yet. There was a lot of talk before Rock made his protest, and you wanted to leave, Preble. Don't forget that.
Yes, I admit, I did offer to leave. But let's continue. That woman came over to our table.
Right. Now, miss, if you'll just come over to the table and take up the glass and say what you said that night.
To your success, Don.
That's right. Now, did you actually drink from that glass on Saturday night?
No. I merely touched the rim to my lips.
It's a frame-up, I tell you. But you haven't sent me to the chair yet. Grant that you say I wish to kill Tess. Why, then, did I poison Rock's wine? How was I to know beforehand that Tess would deliberately drink from Rock's glass?
You're right, Preble. Tess did drink from Rock's glass. She left her own wine untouched. But the chances are 100 to 1 that her wine was poisoned, too.
Now, if you meant to kill Tess, it would have looked very good to have Rock die with her. A sort of suicide pact or something like that. Dr. Gartland, you examined the wine in Miss Blandon's glass.
Yes, I did.
And you found poison there, too.
Yes, that glass also held poison.
Well, there you are, Tom. I think that straps Preble in the electric chair.
Well, just about. It is rather conclusive evidence.
But what? The man is guilty as the devil. So guilty, he'll probably finish the job and kill himself if he gets the opportunity. He's too yellow to walk to the electric chair. Pardon me for breaking in, Mr. Weems, but is that the way the story ended? Preble was really guilty?
Well, Mr. Martin, what do you think?
It certainly looks like it to me.
Yes, to you and the millions of American Weekly listeners. But there's a terrific, shattering surprise at the finish that will lift you right out of your chair. So suppose we end our play here and let our listeners figure out how it should end. Form their own opinions and see how close they can come to the correct solution, which appears in the final episode of The Poison Crystal in next Sunday's American Week.
That's a swell idea. Well, folks, you have heard the dramatic story, the conclusive evidence that proves Preble, the actor, committed the murder. But why not figure it out for yourselves? You try solving the murder and see how close you come to the correct answer, which appears in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper.
Page Drama presents The Dotting of an Eye. Before we begin our front page drama, we have an important announcement to make. Once again, the publishers of the American Weekly have scored the Literary Scoop of the Year. It is a new serial by that master of thrilling fiction, Max Brand. It is the stark story of a man without a country who lived a life of constant danger in the Orient, bargaining with fate by living a lie. It has all the suspense of a mystery tale, all the thrills of the best detective fiction, and the romance of a love story. Don't miss Dead Man's Passport, which begins in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. Front Page Drama brings you the story of a crime that was almost perfect, and one of the small but all-important clues detected by one of the last persons any murderer would have feared, his own son. Great oaks from little acorns grow is an old and true adage. A man's life has been known to be forfeit because he came within the literal dot of the letter I of committing the perfect crime. It is an afternoon late in August when we find ourselves in the living room of a modest home in Pueblo, Colorado, the residence of Everett Hughes, his son Ralph, and his second wife, Anne. Everett is talking to his boy of 18. Let's listen.
I can't for the life of me see what put this fool notion into your head, Ralph. This Purdue University. It just ain't
I've been trying to tell you, Dad. Mom wants me to go. She says I've got to have an education and I might as well go to a good, recognized college. Gosh, Dad, I can't...
There's a lot of things you can't see, young man. I didn't have no college education. Never even finished the sixth grade, for that matter. I had to get out and hustle for a living. And it won't hurt you a particle to do the same.
But Mom says times have changed, Dad. A guy's got to have a degree if he ever expects to amount to anything.
Oh, he has he? Practically saying that your old man don't amount to nothing, are you?
Well, you know I don't mean that, Dad. You always take the wrong meaning. Mom just...
Mom says. Is that all you can say? You and your stepmother siding against me all the time. I'm getting sick and tired of it. And it's going to stop now.
You don't side against you, Dad. And seeing that she's making enough now to be able to send me, I think you'd be glad.
Glad, you think? To have my own son dependent on his stepmother to provide for him? Getting so high and mighty that he looks down on his dad that's just a candy drummer?
Oh, now, Dad...
Now, you listen to me. I ain't going to have it. I'm still boss in my own house, and you'll do what I say.
But
I suppose you'll be saying next that I ought to stay home and do the housework so that your stepmom can put all her time in that story writing of hers. I ought to be just a nobody in my own home since that woman has come to wear the breeches, since she stole my own son from me.
But, Dad, she's your wife.